Okay, so as promised, for the next three sessions, meaning today, Thursday, I assume we have, and then Sunday, Thursday, next Thursday we will not have Hitharus. I assume at least. As promised, we will do Purim stuff, and so I want to do a little bit introductory in McGill's Esther. Probably not what you've thought about McGill's Esther before, right? And then we will look at one Agadata, which you've all heard of before, but it's important to talk about it because you can't not talk about it. And then we won't have time for more than that, so we'll continue next week. We'll do proper work next week. And building sort of Chazal's perspective on Purim type of thing. Okay, so if I had to sum up, what's the agenda of McGill's Esther? What is it trying to do?
God's hidden hand in the world.
How do you ask?
Very good. Okay, so I'm asking you.
So I mean, yeah, there's that view.
God's hidden hand in the world.
Okay. There's no question that that's a very, very strong agenda in McGill, right? Because they don't mention God.
In our times of greatest depravity, it is the light of God's darkness, God's invisibility, that moves us forward.
What's he doing?
I don't know. I'm very confused.
What's that? Sorry.
It's a very poor attempt at a British accent of some sort. I suspect Irish, but I'm not certain.
He said it was British.
Is it Irish?
He said it was an accent. Not Irish. He's from Horses.
I mean, not.
It sounded like you were trying to imitate a sort of British accent. Yeah. Thank you. It wasn't just me.
Does that something to do with success in the diaspora?
Okay, so that's obviously also a theme in the Sefer, right? God's hidden hand in the world is clearly a theme in how the Sefer runs, right? The fact that God doesn't mention God cannot be ignored. It should be noted, there is actually a Greek Megillah Esther, right, which is Ad Kamash Zachurli Pachot O Yoter preserved in the Septuagint. Not exactly, but between the version of the Septuagint and the correct version of the Megillah, which at least by the public, including academics, as is the original, right, you can sort of construct this Greek one, where they actually put God in. Right, and they put God in all sorts of places, but clearly that is an agenda, right? Also, right, true success in diaspora. How does that success in diaspora happen in McGill's Esther?
I mean, at the end, Mordecai gets the signet ring, and Esther is the queen.
That is what happens. But that's what's like. How is it that they achieve success? What is it that they have to do to achieve success?
Political.
Oh wow, that was very modern. No. No, that's very 20th century. I don't see how in this particular case.
Pray.
They killed lots of goyim.
Pray.
Not recorded in Megillah.
Fasting?
That is recorded in Megillah.
How is that not a prayer?
Political initiative?
Very good, right? So they have to work through the political system that exists in Golas, right? Now, obviously they had God's help. And obviously they davened, and they did shuvah, and they did 3 days of tzom, da 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 da. I'm not denying it. I'm really, really not denying it. I think that that's very important. Like I said, that is one of the crucial records of the messages of the Megillah. But if we're talking about temporally, how did they succeed? So clearly they succeeded by working through the existing political system, right?
Yeah.
So that's really one way of dealing with the Malchus that we find in Tanakh. What would be the other way? Would be the other paradigmatic way of dealing with the Malchus.
Just right? Ignoring it?
To rebelling?
Okay, we don't find that so much in Tanakh. A little bit in Sefer Shoftim, but Yishlatan, because they're in Eretz Yisrael, so it might be a little different. What? Not really. So if you have the other place that we really find... is, I suppose, Daniel, right?
Opposing?
No, I mean, you don't find Jews so much opposing the Malchus. Maybe a little bit in, I suppose, Shmoyes, sort of.
A little
of.
Bit in Daniel.
So Daniel, right, Daniel...
Every once in a while,
Daniel's really other case, right? Because Daniel, to say that they oppose the Malchus a little strong, they're definitely part of the royal system. You know, they're brought from Bovel, and they're from Aristotle, excuse me, and then they're raised in the royal palace in Bovel, and they're, you know, they're even given Babylonian names, and they become, you know, seemingly, of course... We know that that Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, Azariah actually insisted on eating only kosher food, right? So they basically lived off like nuts and grains. But they become, to the eyes of anybody who's not paying a lot of attention, you know, the Chol Davar Inyan Babylonians. But then when it comes time to like similar to Mordecai, right? We have a story of them refusing to bow down, right? In fact, we have more than one Daniel, we have two. right? But then that's where Daniil becomes very different, because Daniil, has Daniil become prominent? He doesn't become prominent because he's trying to achieve prominence. He doesn't become prominent because he's trying to work with
the king.
It's
sort of miracle working.
Yeah, well, sort of, yeah, right. Not exactly miracle
working. He advises the king in some way.
Well, he's brought there, right? The king actually brings him to tell him what's going on, right? He's having these dreams, and he doesn't have a chalanti chalema poteris, and so, of course, was not said by Nebuchadnezzar, but similar, right? And they bring Daniil, and Daniil, oh, he's the only one who can work it out. We actually had that story happen more than once, right? That's how Daniil achieves prominence, no?
Yeah, but there's also, like,
it's very, very different.
But Daniel's, if you look at Sefer Daniel as a whole, it's constantly with God's miracles. There's the Kivshana Esh, there's the Aryeh.
Like, that's not how he achieves his prominence. Like, or how he achieves his prominence, because the king is indebted to him because he becomes a conduit for God's communication. Right? Well, they're both seemingly from people, right? They're both, you know, working in the system, but the way they approach the system is very, very different. Mordechai is clearly trying to climb to the top. By the way, where does Mordechai start off?
In the... The gate.
Not exactly. Before then, Yosef Shara Melech, right? The Mordechai is a Yosef Shara Melech. So what's the Yosef Shara Melech? What does Yosef Shara Melech mean?
He's like in the court.
Sorry?
Protest?
He's not in the court. What?
Protest.
Definitely not.
Is he not like a lawyer or law, some type of lawman?
No, I mean, it's very important, right? Somebody who's Yosef Bashar and Tanakh is a Dayan. Right, that's the way Tanakh describes a Dayan, consistently, all the way through. Mordechai starts off important. He becomes more important, but he starts off important. Right, again, not the story of Daniel. We had two very, very different stories. If you could compare, right, what's the precedent for the story of Daniel and Tanakh?
Yosef.
Very good. Right. It's almost exactly the same story. Right? Yosef isn't threatened by Pharaoh the way Daniel is sort of regularly threatened by the kings of Persia, but the story is very, very similar. How about Mordechai and Esther? Who's their precedent earlier in Tanakh? In what way?
Tag team.
I mean, I suppose in the sense that there's two people in both stories, but no, I don't think so. It's similar, sorry?
Well, not just like just men and all.
I don't think so. Who's their precedent, is Tanakh?
Maybe Shlomo or a Davi type character? Like, there are stories, but still, like, politically oriented. Not quite.
We're casting a very broad net if we're going for every politically oriented story in Tanakh. And it's not obvious, right? Maybe Avraham Avinu, right? Working with Avimelech, possibly. I'm not totally convinced about it. Some people have suggested it.
Can you say the difference between two models? Daniel and Yosef kind of moved from the bottom to the top.
Daniel and Yosef are clearly parallel.
And it was much more obvious.
And then what did Mordechai and Esther do? They start at the top and they end at the top, or what?
Firstly, they start at the top. That's very important. That's very, very different. They end sort of close to the top, but they start very close to the top. And secondly, the way they're going for power, not, you know, for themselves, not for ulterior motives, but they're going for power. They're trying to work politically.
Daniel and Yosef are more obviously helped by God.
Yeah. That's also a very, very, very difference. It's not obvious.
You could take out God from the Mordechai and Esther story. Like, not that you can. These are very important. No, the air quotes are very important. So I'm not denying that.
You just on recording said that we could take.
There were air quotes around my idea.
For posterity. Fine. That's very important, right? It's not totally obvious. There actually has been a vote which I strongly dislike in the academic world, that at some level or another the story of Esther was written as a response to the story of Daniel, and it was that Daniel was really working off the story of Yosef to a very large extent, right? And that, you know, the story of Esther was written as a response, no, this is how you should function in Golos. I don't buy that. But clearly something, right, something is very, very different here. The second very, very obvious difference, and it's sort of immediately obvious, in the story of Purim, is that the story of Purim doesn't mention Eretz Yisrael. Right? The closest we get is that, you know, Mordechai Asher Haglam Yerushalayim. Right? He was exiled from Yerushalayim, and then he was brought to Babel, and then he rose through the ranks in Babel. That is there, and in that sense, it's actually very similar to Daniil, but that's pretty much it. Daniil is all about Eretz Yisrael, it's all about Geula, it's all about the return to Eretz Yisrael. That's a major, major theme in the Sefer. In Megillas Esther, we don't hear about it at all. Adrabah, we hear about the Jews succeeding in Golus and basically staying in Golus. Right? So that's a very important, that's a second very important difference. And again, Ad Kama She'aduli, basically unprecedented in Tanakh. Excuse me. In terms of literary precedence for Esther, is there any story in Tanakh that's written similarly? Not really.
Moshe, somewhat. Like, growing up in the king's palace, and that gives him an in, which allows him to somewhat... Like, it's very different.
It's a very different story, but I ask literary parallels, and the parallel is to Moshe. The obvious literary parallel is to Moshe, but not for that reason. If we talk about the structure of the Megillah, so how do we start off the story? We start off with the whole first paragraph, basically, is this grotesque, and it's really grotesque, description of... It is, no? You know, do you disagree with me? 180 days of parties, right? Followed by another 7 for the whole for all the Sareim, and you know, it's Parasim Adai. And then, when they're done with the 180 days, a half a year of parties. Remember in Babylon, they had a 360-day year. Not a 365-day year. The number 180 is not accidental. It's an actual half year, right? They then do a full week of parties for everybody who lives in Shushan Habira. It's like totally, and the description, there's gold, there's silver, Chazal pick up on it, and they make it even worse, but like, it's, the opulence is astonishing, it's astounding. By the way, what were they doing? What were they doing for 180 days?
Drinking and having relations.
I'm sorry?
Drinking and having relations.
That they definitely were doing, but what else were they doing? Come on, you can't do that non-stop for 180 days, you need to break something.
Showing off?
Probably. Sir Rav Midan actually had a shot. He thinks that since the king, most people assume the king Achshverosh was Xerxes. Sir Rav Midan had a clever shot. He said that Xerxes, we know, Xerxes II is the Persian emperor who conducted the second invasion of Greece, where Greece was actually almost conquered. Sir Rav Midan had a clever shot. He said maybe what he did was he called Kol Sarei and Nois Parashim Parasim Adai together to basically have a war conference before they invaded Greece. And in the day they did what, you know, Kol Sarei and Nois Parashim Adai do when they get together. But that's the bit that the Megillah was interested in, so that's the bit it's focused on, but from, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that was what Achashverosh was interested in.
Okay.
It's a possibility. It's a clever theory. I can't prove it, but it's clever. Anyway, so... And then, after that, we almost have, like, a new start, right? So there it says, then we have Achar HaDvarim Ma'ele, which is not really where Perek Bayit starts. Perek Bayit, of course, should start at the bit where you all say out loud, for some reason, Ishyudi Hayah B'Shushan Avirah, Shmei Mordechai Ben Yair Ben Shimi Ben Kish Ish Yemini, right? It's reflected in a trop. The trop suddenly changes dramatically. Not there. Yeah, next passage. But not that passage, right?
So what do you mean it's reflected in the trop?
It doesn't change.
I was going to say, not there. No, the trop doesn't change, it doesn't change to a different type of trop. The mood changes in the trop. Like, the trop reflects that this is a new... It's quite literally a new start to the story. And it's actually there in Chazal that's where we start reading the Megillah. You don't really need to read Perek Aleph plus the first four Pesukim of Perek Beis. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you look in Shmais, a very, very similar thing happens. You have a description of Paro Bayakam El Chadash Shoyayad Leyadas Yosef, right? And then... Whatever, it sort of... It relates, again, in... Not to doubt the historicity of the story, just to point out the way the story is told is grotesque. It's done to make it sound as horrific as possible. I'm sure it was very bad, but right, nobody's happy in this story. It's a really bad story. And then suddenly, again, there's a change, and again, it's reflected in the job. And suddenly, you hear about the hero straight away, right? The hero. We hear about the personal story of the hero who's going to save the day, right? So in that sense, we have a very, very clear literary parallel. Again, playing off Yetzias Mitzrayim is not accidental. It's part of the broader message of the Megillah that God is present even when it's not always obvious. about it's very, very, very clear that we're playing off your teeth. Okay, that was our little hot bummer to McGill's Esther. Now let's do some Gemara. Fine. So the Gemara that you all know, right? You all know it, which is why I didn't really care if I didn't bring it to you. So Daf Tes Amud Beis, I think. No. What? Why? Oh, is that Sayin Amud Beis? Excuse me. My apologies. Okay, so this is, like I said, just because I didn't think I'd have time for more than this today. We'll do something more detailed on Thursday, but today just something that's picante. You'll all hear about much more about this tomorrow, including the Masechta Shonim about it, so I'm not going to go into halacha on my set at all. Just an interesting perspective. Amar Rava. So Rava said, "Michayev inish levesumi b'chraya deliada ben arum Haman levaruch Mordechai." We all know that bit. Right? You have to become so utterly wasted on Purim that you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between cursed be Haman and blessed be Mordechai. In fact, right? There are some Achronim really take this very literally and say you quite literally should get to Shichras Eshalot. Right? In fact, there is even a story which Baruch Hashem is unattributed. The Chacham, some people say in the Chacham Tzvi, in the name of, I think it was the Chacham Tzvi, that every time you see the word Chayev in Chazal, it means Chayev Limser Nashaylov. So even if it kills you, you're Chayev to become so drunk on Purim that you can't tell the difference. Baruch Hashem, that is not found anywhere in the Chacham Tzvi, as his grandson accurately pointed out. Bizarre. Right, this is a very, very strange Gemara for a very obvious reason. It is kanir'eh contradicting the entire halachic system in its entirety that we know, except for this one line in the Gemara, and therefore it has created lots of problems in Roshonim and Achronim, right? So if we read the continuation, right? Rabba ve'rabi zera avdu su'udas purim behadei hadadei ve'adei avdadei ifso. So the Rabbah and Rabbi Zeira decided to have Seudas Purim together, and they got drunk. Very, 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 very drunk. Kam Rabbah Shachtei the Rabbi Zeira. Actually, when I was in Shana Aleph, Rabbi Mit said they were having a discussion about whether it was the Roiv Simani, really need to kill Shecht Kol Simanim, or Roiv Simanim. And so to prove the point, Rabbah came and Shechted Rabbi Zeira to prove you only needed Roiv and not Kol. This is bizarre. But people say very odd things on Purim. Anyway, so, right? Kam Rabba Shachted Rabbi Zeira. Rabba killed Rabbi Zeira. That's why we're not funny, right? That's apparently totally for real. This is bizarre, right? He got so unbelievably drunk that he actually committed murder. Right? Lemachar Vairachami Ve'achye. The next day, he davened for Rabbi Zeira, and Rabbi Zeira came back to life. Baruch Hashem, we're all good. Nothing bad happens on Purim. Leshana should be Haba'ah. I don't know how that word got dropped, but clearly there was Haba'ah in there, and all the Girsais that we have in Midrashim have that word there. Right? Amar Le, Nesimar, Vinavid, Seudas, Purim, Behadeh Hadadi. So next year, Rabba said to Rabbi, you know, last year was so much fun, we should totally do that again. Right? Amar Le, so Rabbi Zeira responds, Loi bechol shaita v'shaita misrachi shnitza. You can't always expect a miracle. Right? Meaning, how does this Mara feel about Seudas Purim, or about getting drunk on Purim at least?
Not so fine.
It's sort of, right? It's not totally clear. I mean, clearly Rabbi remains in favor, bizarrely. Rabbi Zeira is not so hot about it anymore, right? Sounds like. I know, what does he care? Nothing bad happened. And then, apparently, it sounds like, by the way, you should know that Pe'echod, Provençal Rishonim, and Italian Rishonim interpret this Gemara as being a rejection of a requirement to get drunk on Purim. That's where that opinion comes from. They quite literally say that this Gemara means that it's asur to drink on Purim, that there's no requirement. What? I mean, you're allowed to have like a little bit of alcohol here and there. You're not allowed to drink twice at all. Okay. Under no circumstances, because it becomes just like it is all the rest of the year. It is asur meikra din all the rest of the year to drink to excess. least Mount the Pollock, on Purim, it remains Asr to drink to excess because of this Gemara, they assume, because look what happened. Right?
Why isn't
like it? That's not what the Ramah says, that's not the way we're asking, but just to be aware it exists, sorry?
Why isn't it more explicit? Like,
I'm not gonna lie, it's hard to be more explicit than he killed someone because he got drunk. It can be a very compelling read of the Gemara. I can't imagine a more negative portrayal of drunkenness.
Why didn't say Shema Minah or something?
I suppose, like, you know, maybe Shichrus HaShalot, where he slept with his daughter, is one can argue which one of them is worse. One more or another. This is a very negative portrayal of drunkenness.
Both Yahreh and Val Yahor. Pretty same boat.
But then why do you think he didn't say, like, Shema Minah or, like, some conclusion after the story saying, oh, yeah, the Havacha shouldn't
be? You don't always have that. Okay. Let's move on. Amar Rava. Let's do another halacha because it's followed by a story, which I also think is fun. Seudas Purim she'achla b'layla. By the way, these ones you don't know as well. Seudas Purim she'achla b'layla lo yatzei yedei vasoi. If you eat your Seudas Purim at night, then you're not yotzei. Right, we pass in that way, by the way. My timer. Why not? You may mishtev simchachsev. You say you may mishtev simchach. So you may, right, during the day. Rav Ashi have Yasiv Kame de Rav Kahana or a Mamer maybe in the Shiltos, whatever, right? Somebody. So Rav Ashi was singing in front of, you know, somebody. Naga Vele Asu Rabana. So all the Talmidim didn't come to the Beis Midrash that morning, it was Purim. Amar Lei, my time Le Asu Rabana. So it says, why didn't all of the Rabbanan, and why is our yeshiva empty on Purim morning? Everybody should be here learning.
Okay, how many Ramim could you actually see coming to Shir that day and wondering that? Because I have a couple that pop into my mind.
Let's finish reading it.
You
better watch what you say. So the answer again, Purim. Maybe they're in the middle of getting ready at Sudas Purim. They're so busy on Sudas Purim that they can't come to Shir. Sounds like a reasonable excuse, right? Mm-hmm. I actually had somebody. There was, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago, somebody actually gave a Musar Shmuz, the Talmud, right, gave the Chon Chizuk, where he basically said, and that's why Purim's so wonderful, because we don't learn on Purim. I was sort of looking at him, I'm like, wow, it's for real, he's being serious. Who would have thought? Anyway, so, fine. Dilma Triti Bezudas Purim. I'm really, the Loi have a Efsher Lamichle Me'orta. Couldn't they have eaten it last night, and then they come to Shur today? No, what's going on? It says, "Amar leish be leimar leimar had Amar Rava Sudas Purim she'achla b'layla lo yatzei yedei chevasei." Didn't you hear? Rava already said that if you eat Sudas Purim at night, you're not yotzei, right? So Amar le in Tana minei arbeim zinim v'dami le keman demanach bechisei. So it says, then he repeated this teaching to himself. It says 40 times, presumably many, right? Until he understood it so well, it was left in his pocket. What's funny about this story?
Why this halacha doesn't seem like a simple halacha, like what?
Okay, maybe.
But, like it's not trey o trey. Back to pshat.
I mean, he's like, oh yeah, you're right, and then he said, oh, so he had an excuse to not. I didn't have an excuse. What did he say in the end?
He said, oh, what a wonderful piece of Torah, and he sat there and he chazered it until he was like, it was as though he was resting in his pocket.
A piece of Torah that you're not allowed to do it at night.
That you're not allowed to. That you have to have your Sudas Purim during the day. You can't be yotze at night. What's weird about the Gemara? I mean, what did he not do?
Eat.
Yeah. He didn't go around to have his Sudas Purim. Because he presumably had his Sudas Purim the night before, right? Because he thought you could be yotzei with that. Why didn't he go around to have his Sudas Purim? Don't we pass in Zerizim Makdim? We really do. We pass in Zerizim Makdim. Why didn't they? Okay, I'll come to you after this Purim then. I'll be yotzei with you. What does that mean? He repeated it to himself 40 times until it was sitting there in his pocket. Right? He didn't change his mind, right? He sat there and learned about Purim instead of going to a Surah. Into a Surah. That's what the Gemara is saying, no?
True Gush Hero.
No, I mean, maybe not. Maybe it's not. You're thinking literally it means right then he took you to get it 40 times?
Sounds like it, yeah.
How long does it take to do it 40 times? We're still in the morning. They have all day.
I know, but it's still funny that he doesn't say, oh, I need to have a Surah Purim now. It sounds like he didn't have his... the response to the statement of Rabbanan didn't come to the Beis Midrash to learn because they were busy in Sotis Purim because of this Pesach of Rava was, okay, I'm going to sit here and learn about Hilchos Purim. No?
Yeah.
It works out a little funny.
Yeah.
Okay. In fairness, this is something you'll see Keseder, every single time you learn something about the halachas in Sotis Purim, there's sort of like ambiguity that shows up in when Chazal relate to Purim, and on the other hand, Purim's wonderful, and on the other hand, like there's a tendency to excess, which Chazal clearly didn't like. Or at least parts of Chazal clearly didn't like. Chazal not monolithic, right? Members of Chazal clearly didn't like, and you can see it.
I mean, you could say presumably he had his suit up, but he had it after he learned.
Oh, entirely possible. But I said the way
continued learning.
Yeah, the way the Gemara is presented is that whether or not he ended up passing the Krava doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
We passed the Krava, but whether or not he passed the Krava doesn't really matter. Right, that's not the point of this story. Okay. Later, we will, like I said, do more in-depth stuff, hopefully, Thursday.